Soul Talk is a podcast dedicated to making space for Latinx storytellers and content creators across all media to chat about their art, experiences, and culture. As a branch of the Soul Project, Soul Talk welcomes you to the Green Room.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Soul Talk. As always, it is I, Joey Reyes. I am the associate producer of the Soul Project. And of course, I'm joined with...
Hi, my name is David Mendizabal, and I'm the associate artistic director of the Soul Project. We're so excited to be here today, episode 2 of our fall season, chatting with 3 of the organizing members of La Gente Network, which was just launched this month. So we're going to be chatting with Regina Garcia, Ana Maria Aburto, and Tania Orellana from La Gente. And Joey, do you want to tell us a little bit more about what La Gente is for those that don't know?
Yes, absolutely. The launch of the La Gente Network, just as David mentioned, just launched this month. Their mission is to increase visibility, engagement, and advocacy for Latinx designers, technicians, and managers in the live performance field, engaging in conversations with theaters, directors, producers, administrators, audiences, and the larger theatrical community. La Gente works and speaks in solidarity with other BIPOC networks, learning and actively practicing anti-racist strategies and dismantling oppressive practices in the theater. And wow, what a mission statement.
What an entrance into the world, you know, at the top of Hispanic Heritage Month, just saying presente, we are here, we are talking to each other, be ready for what's about to come, you know. And as I said, you know, these are 3 of the organizing members. It's we've been told that there are 15 organizing members out of a current membership of 192, and that is ever growing. There is information in the description about how to get involved, including their Instagram handle and a Google form if you are a Latinx theatrical designer, technician, or manager in the field. Get involved with this group.
Yes, absolutely. And I love too that they coincided this launch with the beginning of Hispanic Heritage Month. Like, what a vibrant time too. And I think this is probably why, like, fall in general is one of my favorite seasons, is that there's always this, like, rumbling around this time of, like, the beauty of Latinidad, and then, you know, leaning into Dia de Muertos too on the other end of the, at the other side of the month in October, November. Like, I just, yeah, it makes my heart very warm. I love it so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's so exciting. It's an exciting way to start the fall. It's an exciting way to really sort of see what collective action has emerged, what, you know, more collective action has emerged outside of this moment of pause, you know. And I'm super excited because, you know, I right before the shutdown, I did get a chance to work with Tania on Don't Eat the Mangoes at the Magic. Mm. She's an incredible designer, you know, knowing Regina's work and knowing, not knowing that I knew Anna's work, but having gone to her website and seeing that she's worked on so many projects that I've loved, is such an exciting conversation to have with them. And as a former designer myself, I just, you know, I love designers. So I'm like, yeah, it's like, you know, they feel like my people, mi gente. So can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm wondering, like, how your because you entered the field as a designer, how that now informs your practice as a director.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of it is really understanding that collaborative practice and, like, what other artists on the creative team are doing, you know, these generative artists who are there. I believe designers are dramaturgs, you know, and that every single decision that gets made by all of the members really help to tell that story. So for me, it's just, you know, I have serious love for designers. I love working with new designers. I love meeting designers, you know, so it's especially exciting to get to talk to them and get to understand a little bit. It's, you know, it's such a personal field. Everyone works their own way. And so really getting to understand a designer's process, their background, what they bring to the storytelling process is just, you know, you never know. It's a mixed bag. And so it's super thrilling.
Absolutely. Oh, what a way to start this new season too. I'm really excited. Stay tuned and we will be right back with our 3 guests for today. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Hi, hi.
Hello.
Thank you all so much for being here, Regina, Tanya, and Anna. How are you all today?
Well, how are you?
We're doing good. We're doing well. We'd love to. So we're super excited about La Gente. I think, you know, happy Hispanic Heritage Month and a wonderful launch of on social media with such beautiful design and just a beautiful we are here presente moment. We would love, you know, I know we're here talking to three of the organizing members of the network, so we'd love for you all to introduce yourselves, let us know where you're calling in from and what your particular design medium is in the field, and anything else you'd like to share.
All right. Well, my name is Regina Garcia. I'm a scenic designer and educator. I'm coming in from Chicago.
Yes.
My name is Tanya Orellana, and I'm also a scenic designer, and I'm calling in from Los Angeles.
Yes.
My name is Ana Maria Aborto. I am calling in from not Mexico City. I'm calling in from New York City.
You wish it was Mexico City, right?
honestly, it would be definitely warmer. But no, I'm calling in from New York City, and I'm here also representing the technical side of theater. I am a scenic artist in New York City.
Amazing, amazing. From Mexico City, correct?
From Mexico City. I don't know why I plugged that in.
I love that. Here we are in Zoomlandia, and we are able to have such a, you know, cross-country conversation with so many amazing artists, which is such an exciting thing about this particular moment of not so many exciting things. So we're so excited. As I said, congratulations on the launch of La Gente Network. I think so many of us were on Facebook and we heard rumblings of collective action. We've seen, I think, in this particular moment especially, so much collective organizing, which I think is so incredible. You know, we've had the time on our hands, and I think it's the work that's been necessary is gathering and talking in our own sort of affinity spaces and organizing and seeing how we want to change not only the world, but the field. So, you know, I think first and foremost, will you let us know, how did it all get started? What was the impetus for gathering? And let us know a little bit about the mission and the goals of La Gente.
Absolutely. I'll get us started. I will say that we've had a Facebook page since 2016 and with about 51 members. And it started small. And it was in response to several conversations and several festivals where, let's just say that as theater makers, we were just not necessarily directly included. We felt that there was a lot of conversations about aesthetics, about life in the field, about mentorship, support, about labor practices and professional practices. And still, when folks gathered, the technicians and the designers were not, you know, part of the conversation, and we thought that there was something missing and that we wanted to make sure that there was somebody or at least a group of folks with their eyes and ears open, standing by to be a resource, especially for folks, you know, coming out of school and joining the field or pivoting from one job to another. We just wanted to have a private space where we could talk. Now, fast forward to now and the pandemic and being in this important moment of reflection in our field, I think several members felt that we should actually gather and make meetings and talk about how we were feeling about it all, about dismantling those oppressive practices and let's say breaking down so that we could see the whole for its parts, let's say that, when it comes to, let's say, harassment and microaggressions and all sorts of things. But we were also sincerely worried about the young folks that were coming out, and they were concerned about a life and about a job in the theater because the theater had, you know, taken this important pause. So I would say that in the last 6 months, we've grown from 81 to 192. And it's been really interesting. And slowly but surely, folks are bringing their issues to the table. And I think we appreciate their candor and their real concern for our community. In terms of our goals, I think Ana Maria can share a couple of things about that. I think they became very clear at the top of the summer.
Yeah, one of the things that we really wanted to make clear when we started thinking about the La Gente as like a launch, right? Like we wanted people to know who we were. We were thinking about how visually we were going to look, but we wanted to first and foremost explain like what our goals were, and that is our VEA, so VEA, like visibility, engagement, and advocacy. Because we wanted to put first and foremost, like we're here to amplify our voices. We're here to increase visibility. We want people to know that we exist, that we are active members of the theater community. And we wanna engage people and talk to us and having those conversations about adding us to their team and what we bring to the team and how we're designers. We are technicians and we're not sitting somewhere else waiting to get like called in just for the Latinx thing. Like we wanna be like active members all the time. And then we also wanna, you know, use this platform because we think that this is also a point where we have to consider what other people are doing, other networks. There's a lot of BIPOC communities that also need resources and help. So we wanna be able to, you know, move sideways and be like, okay, like we have this and we have this voice, but they also need a shout out. So we're gonna help them out too. And we just wanna be, you know, helping everybody in the theater community as well. Especially also the like education part of it, as Regina was saying, like there's a lot of young students that are coming out of school or that are in the middle of school that are thinking about like, what is this going to look like further in my career? And already there aren't a lot of very prominent figures that they see on the big theaters. Like you don't think of Broadway as a place where you see a lot of BIPOC members in the design team. So we want to show them that that exists. And that is really what the Instagram is about. And part of what the network is to show by example that we're out there, that we're having good careers, that we have opportunities, that we can share also those resources that maybe we didn't have and give them that leg up and uplift those people.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Tanya, did you have something you wanted to add?
I guess I'll just add, just to echo everything that Ana Maria just said, like we definitely wanted to have a platform that made finding a Latinx designer, technician, and manager easy and to share resources in an equitable way. And I think the exciting part of all of this is seeing how many of us are coming out as we start promoting this. And I think a lot of us have had experiences in institutions where we felt alone, you know,
yeah.
And whether that's like a theater institution or academic institution. And so a lot of this is about saying like, you're graduating, you're scared that you're gonna be alone, but there's actually a large network and we're like a huge movement in this country. And so I think that's really important to engage with our entire community and say that we're here as a network to support you and to support one another.
Absolutely. I think there's such a, you know, in terms of visibility, it's not only visibility in the field that we're here, but it's also visibility for ourselves. We are here. There is this massive network. And one thing, you know, I'd love to talk about is there is absolutely a need for more Latinx representation in the design industry. But I think also if you really break it down as well, talking about how people understand theatrical designers in general has been a conversation that I think has really been coming up, especially now in this moment of pause where it's like, who are the artists that are being supported right now in Zoom? Who are the artists that aren't? And, you know, I'm sort of curious to know, what is it that you would like, as theatrical designers and folks who are in the theater design field, what are some things that you think people need to understand about theatrical designers in general before we can really keep this conversation going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes theatrical designers are seen as creating a beautiful stage picture that is then performed on when in fact they're contributing to a lot of conceptual thinking that will influence the entire characteristic and action of the performance. Because design really wants to feel, at least to me, design really wants to feel like it isn't interchangeable, that the specific production could not have existed with another designed. And so I think it's really important for designers to be seen as contributing thoughts and ideas as much as they're contributing visuals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and multiple points of view within that. I mean, it's amazing. I think I'm gonna quote Tanya the other day that she said that we speak multiple languages visually. And I think that's very important. And I think as visual dramaturgs, as especially the scenic designers, as dramaturgs of a scenic landscape, our contribution is key
in
those early stages of the production process.
Yeah, I love that you use that term, visual dramaturgs. You know, I think so many, there is this misconception in the field that theatrical designers are merely responsive artists. And I think that it's like, no, we have to really acknowledge the generative artists that designers are, how much they bring to help. You know, a playwright can write the most magical world on a page, but how does that page come to life? A director can have a vision for how it's going to work, but a designer is really going to come in and, as you said, be a dramaturg to help define what are the rules of a world that we're building on stage. And it's not purely in response to work. It's actually such generative questions that are involved. So yeah, I totally agree. And I love, Ana Maria, that you said you're here representing the technical field of it. Because I think also, you know, one thing that I think people don't realize is you open up your playbill and you see the sort of front page and you've got your like six designers listed. But there's a whole book of names of this incredible talent that's behind the making of this. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about your work as a scenic painter and what that sort of interface is for the technical artists who are working with the scene shops, who are working with the designers, who are then working, you know, with all of the other creatives on the team.
Yeah, it's pretty, I love it so much because to me, I've always wanted to be behind the scenes, and this is the behind the scenes that allows me to really work with my hands like every day and just be really active in the development of a finalized design. So I really like that. I don't remember the rest of your question. I'm so sorry.
Well, I guess, just talking about sort of intersection between being on the technical side and your relationship to designers and to scene shops and sort of just how that there's a whole network underneath the network, not underneath, but alongside the network of designers that we do see. And there's a whole network of artists that we are not necessarily seeing. So give us a little insight into that world.
Oh, okay. So I don't understand now. What was really crazy to me when I came out of college, because in college I studied set design, but when you move to New York, you're like not gonna just like suddenly become a designer. So I really threw myself into scenic art because there was so much work of it. But I got really lucky because I got an internship with a wonderful woman-owned shop, and that was really exciting to me. And there were a lot of people that I met there, but I was the only person of color working there for a long time. And it was just a matter of like meeting other people and asking for references and, you know, seeing what other shops are available, sending them cold emails. The network of it is really just about who you know. And I think that that is part of like the thing that I want La Gente to help out with, because I know a lot of people who don't know that this is a viable career and that there is work, even like not even just as a designer, as a scenic artist. Like if someone had told me that you could be a scenic artist and make a good living 8 years ago, maybe I would be somewhere else, right? Like I would have gone that way to begin with.
Right.
And the fact that you have to go through so many unpaid internships and you have to go through so many like low wage jobs to get to a place where it is a reasonable living, it seems really difficult, you know, I imagine like a parent who's gonna like let his kid go out and like be an artist and thinking about like how they will struggle when the reality is like they don't know that there is a life where you don't struggle.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of like letting them know that it exists and helping them get to those shops, get to those lists of people who will help you out. And that way you can create a career and build your own network.
Yeah.
But it has to be, you have to help. It's an inside job pretty much.
I'd like to speak to what's already been highlighted here in this conversation so far as like, Tanya, you mentioned earlier that part of the origin of this is people feeling like they're alone, feeling like they're not represented, or they're searching and looking for some sort of representation. and how important it is for those visuals to exist figuratively and literally. And I just wanted to shout out your graphic designer, Natalie Arco, because the visuals that have been, that have come out with the launch of La Gente are so striking and so beautiful. That speaks to what we're already talking about, is like the power of design, and even talking about graphic design. And especially now that we've launched into the virtual world, I'm wondering if any of you can speak to your experience so far, or have heard of other experiences of what it's been like to sort of start to make a shift of designing in this space in particular.
So I think that when we started talking to Natalie, Natalie just like somehow just immediately knew what it had to be. And she came up with this incredible research of like stores or like hand painted signs outside, like in little bodegas in South America and like Latin America. And we just knew that it had to be good and vibrant and colorful. And when she picked all those colors, we were able to just play around with the ideas that we had for the launch campaign and develop them to be the striking, powerful, welcoming force that I think La Gente is going to become.
Yeah, and I think we spent a lot of time discussing as a group. In the beginning, we were trying to figure out what we wanted, what's the first thing we wanted to put out. And because we're designers, it felt really important that the way that we put ourselves out there was as designers, and that it had a very strong visual impact. And I think part of that was saying that we don't want it to feel functional. Like, you need a designer, we're saying you need to have a wider range of type of designer. We wanted to make it so that when you find us, it's really exciting, because I think to us, we feel like we are an important voice in the National Theater movement. And so when you come to our website, look at what an incredible group of designers there are, and you're excited to pick from our group.
And explore the full membership. Yes. Even. I think that's very important. And I think also the conversations earlier on the process, since we started with designers, but then kind of opened it up for technicians and stage managers, there was a lot of conversation about what those partnerships are within the field. And designers, we just can't do it. We can't do it without those important partnerships with, especially for the scenic designers, with the TDs and scenic artists, the lighting designers with the master electricians and board operators, the projection designers with their very kind of robust team of collaborators around them. It was very important that we included everybody, let's say those duos and trios that make it happen along the way. Once the conversation started including stage managers, we felt that we were more complete, and we really had a good sense of who we needed to include. The goals came out really just very organically. We were just clear on what those next steps were going to be. So we're really happy and blessed to have gone through that process. Even the whole name shift or change was a very important step for all of us. And we did surveys and we went back and forth. I'm really grateful for the conversations and everything I learned from my colleagues along the way.
Yeah, I love that you bring into the room all of the other collaborators that are so key to the success of a theatrical vision, bringing in master electricians and technical directors and programmers and board ops and stage managers, especially, you know, you brought up earlier this conversation around how in many of the conferences, and I know with the LTC, one of the big pillars, that's the Latinx Theater Commons, one of the big pillars has been a conversation around aesthetics. Regina, I know you helped pioneer bringing designers into Carnaval, that second round, which was just so thrilling to get to see aesthetics at play. And I'm sort of curious, you know, and I think what's so exciting about this national network and this super diverse range of aesthetics that are being presented is it's really combating this idea of a monolithic Latinx identity or a monolithic Latinx aesthetic. You know, and I think especially as we're having conversations that are coming up about cultural competency in this moment, and as it relates to aesthetics, I'm just curious to know, like, for you personally, how does your identity as a Latinx person identify and shape your approach to the theatrical process and your approach to your own individual aesthetics. Ana Maria, you mentioned the graphic designer looking to South America bodegas and the colors there and these sort of narratives that come out that, you know, for an audience, we might not know, but we feel something about that in the vibrancy of the color. So I'm just curious to know for you individually, how your identity shapes your own aesthetics and process.
For me, I think my upbringing and my training or the dialogue that exists between the two allows me to find multiple entry points into a story. We were talking the other day about how there isn't just one entry to any given story and how we actually build multiple models and that we do multiple renderings and that it is about vetting ideas against one another to see which one is clear, which one accomplishes what we want to accomplish as a team with a particular project. As I was growing up in Puerto Rico, I was not only studying Puerto Rican culture, but I was also studying Mexican and Spanish culture, especially in literature and history. And that I was also studying British and the history of the United States. Every little bit of information along the way that kind of builds that Rolodex of information of, how can I say this? Looking back, it's all important. I just filed it away. And now as a master scenic designer, and we all are masters at our craft, I am able to access that information in a way that makes sense directly for the project, directly for the organization, or the collaborators that I'm working with, especially the director. So I think that is one thing that is perhaps makes me unique, right? I start the process always from the outside in. I put multiple proposals forth, and then we talk. And that is, I think, the best way to delve deeper into a project. But I think Tania has the better quote. So I'll leave it up for Tania. She has the, she can talk about, I think we were talking about work ethic the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the way that it sort of my Latinx identity shapes me is that I grew up in the Mission District of San Francisco, which is a predominantly Latinx neighborhood and has been shaped in different eras by different waves of Latinx immigrants. And yeah. Something I experience, like a lot of first generation people, is this push and pull between my Salvadoran heritage and my US upbringing. But the specific place of the Mission District really grounded my identity as like a Mission Salvadoran. And I think for me, there's very little separation between space and story and how a space can really shape complex identity. And so that's a part of the philosophy that I bring with me to the design table as a set designer.
Love that.
I'm going to talk a little on what Regina said at the end about work ethic, because I moved to the United States 14 years ago, and I watched my parents work really hard to just keep us here and safe. And I think that it really impacted the way that I pick work, the way that I look for work, and how much I work. I think that seeing my dad just like try absolutely everything, and it really inspires me every day to go out there and like never complain at all about, like, obviously, like, if a job is like super unsafe, definitely complain, but I'm saying, like, you know, like, if I have to wake up at 5 a.m, I have to wake up at 5 a.m. I am incredibly lucky to have come to a place that allows me to have this dream. And I'm gonna tell you, Mexicans are dreamers, and I'm gonna keep following this dream, and I'm working really hard for it every day. So I think that's kind of how my upbringing really places this emphasis on work ethic.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Thank you. I mean, all those answers were so personal, and I think it just really shows how much your individual personal experiences, identity shape that process. And I think it's part of the reason why this idea of visibility and like, who are the designers that you know? And if you don't know them, you're not meeting them, you're not able to expand your own, you know, to use your own Rolodex of possibility as directors, producers, artistic directors. You know, it's like, who are the artists that you know? Because each individual artist is bringing such a wealth of information information. We know that when we talk about playwrights. So how do we sort of take that to the field of designers? And then especially, I think, in this moment in time, having this conversation about how are we expanding the Latinx designers and that Latinx design network that's out there and that people are connecting with. So I love that. Thank you. And I love this idea of a Rolodex. It's such a great metaphor. Like, it's such a great metaphor of, yeah, there is this like filing cabinet in my head of all of these experiences. At any moment, you sort of just like turn to one and it's like, why did you turn to that one? I don't know, but that's the one I turned to. And does that do something for my collaborator or not? No. Okay. Turn the Rolodex, go to another one. I love that. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, thank you for that. I also wanted to say that since you mentioned Carnaval earlier, and I'm very grateful of everything that I've learned through the comments about my community and about my colleagues, I just want to say that of course, Chris Acebo and Lisa Portes for that Carnaval were real champions of putting everybody forth. And, you know, I think to this day, we all wish that we had more plays and more teams in that weekend, that magical weekend.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing them into the room. I know that, you know, all of those decisions, they take networks of people who are helping champion these ideas. And, you know, I think back to that Carnaval and just how exciting it was to hear designers talk about a process, just to understand the theatrical process of how they get there, you know, putting together these teams. You know I've worked with many of the designers that I met at Carnaval because of that, because I got to see a little bit of how that process is. So I think, you know, when we're talking about one of your pillars of visibility, that's it right there. We see it in action in those ways, and how can we continue to expand on that? Yeah,
absolutely. And I just want to say, in terms of visibility, because it's really important, we were already approached by several teachers. One was an old friend from the Bronx, and she was like, oh my God, Regina, do you have video already about what you do and how you do it? Because I have kids here interested in theater, and you know, it's not all about performance, and I want them to see you work, or I want to see your colleague work. Do you have anybody in lighting? Because I have a couple of and our community in the Bronx is over 75% students of color. So please send it. And I was like, okay, we're starting. We're just at the beginning of this. We'll have videos very soon. But there is an overall excitement about visibility, about these kids seeing themselves in these other positions within our field. Is very important.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that leads me to something that you brought up earlier in the conversation too, where you're talking about mentorship. And I think this idea of mentorship comes up all the time. We hear it all the time, you know. And another thing, Ana Maria, you brought up, and you didn't necessarily say this, but I'm going to say it, the abolition of unpaid internships. Like, that moment is done. No unpaid labor. But I think that, you know, there's a connection there between what we knew as unpaid internships and this idea of like what you're getting is mentorship. But I think we've all experienced, more often than not, that's not the case. So I'm curious to know, you know, with this sort of abolition of unpaid internships and re-examining the idea of mentorship, you know, if there's more that you can expand on that, or if there are other tangible shifts that the La Gente is calling to the field to make.
I don't think we've made any very like set in stone, like calling for the abolition of unpaid internships. I feel like everybody kind of knows that like, we shouldn't do those. I don't think that it's fair for people. I personally have done a couple of unpaid to pretty much unpaid internships in my experience. And the idea is that they're supposed to be like a win-win, right? So like they get something and you get something. But a lot of the times I felt like I was being used and I was being, you know, given tasks and tried to fulfill the task, but there wasn't a mentorship. There was just like you're an employee, do what you're told. When I was young and I wanted to learn, this was the opportunity, what I thought was an opportunity to grow and learn. And I was always told like, you get to put that on your resume and that you get a reference. And I was like, well, yes, but also like, where is my learning and how am I going to make a living doing this? If this is the kind of bridge I have to cross, you know, I think that there should be definitely more opportunities that aren't unpaid. I think we should consider, there's big theaters out there who that still do unpaid internships, or you even have to pay for housing. And that kind of stuff is totally outdated. We should not have to ask people to sponsor interns so they can spend a summer working 17-hour days. That's outrageous.
Yeah, I just want to say that's exploitation.
You're right. That is exploitation.
Yeah, that is exploiting people's hopes and dreams, essentially. Like you mentioned, a lot of young people are often the ones that are put into that are seeking these opportunities because they, as far as they know, that's their way to get into the field, and that's the way that they're going to make a connection. Or, you know, speaking from personal experience, feeling like that's just what I'm going to have to do, you know, in order to further myself, and then hope that, like, you know, a couple years into it, that you're not tired of doing it, so that way when you finally do get into the positions that you're looking for, that you like have you still have the passion and drive to do the work if you haven't like been so exhausted from being so exploited.
Absolutely. I think, and you know, that's a whole other session of stories of like New York in the 90s and 2000s, whatever, but I have stories, but that idea or that concept that comes from these are young folks that have just got out of school or are training in theater, and they need to pay their dues. So here's an internship, so that they have access to a group of people that otherwise they wouldn't, I think is old. I think it doesn't really work. I think what we need, and I'll leave it up, I'll ask Tanya to speak to this, but I think it's about allowing the young practitioners to practice. Designers, technicians, they need to practice. And they are trained, and they need to be compensated for that time and that level of commitment that they bring forth and that work ethic.
Oh yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've talked about is that something we'd like to see happen is creating opportunities for young designers to create new work in the same way that playwrights create new work. And I think especially when you're a younger designer, you need opportunities to see your ideas play out. And I was very fortunate to join a company right after undergrad called Campo Santo in San Francisco. And they really gave me a place to like foster my ideas, figure out what it was that I was interested in. And I think that's something that a lot of young designers don't get, is the opportunity to actually see their ideas and to be treated as an artist that needs development, the way that all artists need development, and sort of a community to have a feedback chamber with to discuss their work. And I think in terms of mentorship with the entire network, one of the things we're working for is making resources available, and also kind of this idea of like, what does it mean to have people in the network, some of them at a kind of more traditional Broadway talk with, you know, kind of that regional world versus someone who's left undergrad all in the same network, and what kind of conversations that allows. Because I think something that happens within our community is that when you know people within the world of theater, you're able to have someone look at your work and give you feedback. And that's an advantage that sometimes we didn't get because people didn't see us as important enough to have that conversation with when we were young designers. So just saying, here are the people that can give you a model for theater. And honestly, email them, see if they'll look at your work and get feedback as a young artist.
Yeah, no, I love that. And thank you for bringing Campo Santo into the space also. You know, prior to the shutdown, I actually had the amazing opportunity to work with Tanya in San Francisco at the Magic on Don't Eat the Mangoes. And while I was there, I got to see another piece that you designed that was gorgeous. I actually think about that design so much. There's something about the whole design team was really, that piece, Translating Selena, was just beautiful and impactful. And I think, you know, what you're saying is this idea of these artistic homes really for young designers, and not young designers just to be laborers, but young designers to try to put stuff up there, to try. I think for so many artists in the theater, it's like you learn by doing. You know, I say that I teach a directing class now, and I'm like, I don't know how to teach you direct. I think you got to direct, and then we could talk about it. You know, you got to, it's about doing, and from learning about the process. What is your individual process? What is, you know, what are the things that you need? What are the things that are working? How are people responding? And I love that idea also, just about a network of people who see value in you as an artist and who can affirm that value and who are willing to give you that constructive feedback and that time, that real time, I think, that mentorship requires of like, I see you, I affirm you, I'm gonna give you feedback, I'm gonna take some time to share with you my thoughts, which are just one person's thoughts, you know what I mean? And anyone's can shape it. But I think that's just like, yeah, when you're really thinking about mentorship, like that is, it's, do you see value and are you willing to put in the time into a network? So yeah, I love that. One thing that I would love to also just shifting us, moving us into, you know, Ana Maria, you brought up VEA, which is visibility, engagement, and advocacy are the three pillars of La Gente. And, you know, one of the things I think that we've been seeing in a lot of this collective organizing, you know, we see it in We See You, White American Theater. There's a lot of this idea of like seeing. It's like we see you, we see each other, we see ourselves, you know, and this, all of these things that are important. And I think as it relates to advocacy and as you guys have, as you all have positioned yourself in your statement of speaking in solidarity with these other BIPOC networks, I'd love for you to speak about how La Gente as a collective and your philosophies on how we can see each other in terms of the other networks that are collectively organizing and how we can be there as advocates and allies and accomplices for the rest of the collective organization that's happening to better all of us in the field.
Yeah, I think that what we really... Regina, you want to talk about this?
No, I was just going to say, Ana Maria, we can, I think we can give them a little sneak peek of what's to come on Insta.
Ooh, sneak peek. Yes.
Yeah. So part of the Instagram, our big goal was so that we would ask people to submit content that we can then share ourselves and kind of highlight different people. So we want to be able to highlight designers that are, you know, from different fields, from different backgrounds, from different networks also, so we can keep uplifting each other and like showing to the world, like, this is a person that has done a lot of work, or this is a person who's in school, they're still doing their thing, or this is another network that we also really respect, and they're going, you know, they're also doing kind of the same stuff that we're doing, where we're trying to make sure that everybody knows that we exist, that we're working, that we enjoy what we do, that we're professional, right? And that's kind of like a little bit of what we're going to be doing in the future. We need people to really...
There's a calendar.
...house their work so we can share it.
Yeah.
There's a calendar, and we have certain rotations in mind to make sure that we amplify everybody equitably. We're going to most definitely put forth Afro-Latinos that are working diligently in our field. We're going to be also amplifying other voices and other kinds of work, folks that often don't get recognized that work solely in work in Spanish.
Yes.
In theater in Spanish. We're going to focus on some important women in the field and the history, on Mujercoles, on Wednesdays. There's
love that.
We're gonna really rotate and keep that going to make sure that we make it not only through our membership, but also through some other groups, including the Black Designers Network. So, and with the other day, we spoke to Mikiko McAdams. And so it's coming, and we're just hoping to kind of keep it going and get that momentum and make sure that everybody gets seen.
Yeah, I love that.
As much as possible. I know it's going to be a big task, and we hope that the community supports us and tags us and lets us know where they are, and we will put them forth.
Yeah, one of the things that we really want to encourage theaters to do is to see who's local, you know, because right now with the coronavirus, it's kind of hard to travel. And if you're going to fly into your regional theater, another designer, why not hire someone who's right there, right? And so part of the highlights will be like where you are and like where else you can be. Some people have two places that they can call home, and that's great. And we should always encourage people to see who's around. Yeah. You know, to see who's here.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time looking at our Instagram categories and wanting to make sure that we were holding ourselves accountable and how we were showcasing our community and what were the kind of tendencies that happen within all communities, but within our community, and sort of saying like, we want to make sure we set up a system that we don't accidentally start falling into the traps. Because I think a lot of the time, yeah, when we're looking at how to undo structures, you need a structure to undo it, because it's like so inherent in us. So how do we create a system that is designed to kind of take away the system that exists?
Yeah.
Definitely sharing the resources. Like, we have a day that's dedicated to BIPOC Alliance, so that we're building this network, these contacts, this system, and then saying we dedicate this day to other communities, share our network, you know, and we're trying to track everything we're doing to make sure that when people ask us how we did it all, we have a clear, like, oh, just read all this notes we've been taking and like, we'll come talk to you. And we want all the other communities to also feel empowered to create this network for themselves.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you acknowledge, you know, like the first thing to dismantling some of those systems is to acknowledge and recognize the way in which those systems appear in ourselves and our own community. And how are we actively dismantling and challenging them for ourselves in that advocacy and active dismantling outside of ourselves as well. So I love that you bring that in, and all of this advocacy sounds incredible. I am so excited about Mujercules. I love that. That's just, I mean, talk, there you go, designers. Designers and aesthetics and branding, y'all are on it. Yes. As we're sort of winding down this conversation, one of the things, Regina, that you brought up is the network of support. And one thing that we did talk about is no unpaid labor. And so I know that you are all also actively fundraising right now for support for the network and for the labor that everyone in the collective organizing team is putting in. So if there's any information you can share with our listeners about how they can get involved and support, we'd love that.
Oh my God, I think right now we definitely need everybody to say presente and to send forth their work. We want to make sure that we are thorough. We want to make sure that we represent the folks in Oklahoma and Utah and all those other states. Right now, we're just trying to spread the news nice far and wide, because it's very important, like Ana Maria was saying, that we want to make sure that folks know who their local community is. Nobody's alone. We want to see their work. We want to amplify it on Instagram. We have a campaign going on right now for the big goal, right, which is our website, hopefully launching in November, that will be kind of a national director of designers, technicians, and managers. You will be able to use some filters to find who's local. And talking about dismantling systems that don't work, we've had tons of conversations about what those filters could and should be for a directory of this nature. And I think folks that can should, would love for them to, if they can't get involved in all of it, to just, you know, drop us a line and say, I would love to be involved in the education portion. I want to be involved in specifically in advocacy and connecting with other movements and networks. I want to make sure that I amplify what's happening in my community. So I want to be a point person for the folks in my town. Anything and everything is possible. I think right now, because we're in the beginning of it, we just want to see, the stuff. We want to celebrate the work. We want to celebrate that you are here and that you're seen and that you're part of our family, familia siempre. I think things will come and there's going to be plenty of opportunity for folks to connect in a variety of ways.
No, I would just say following our Instagram to us, that's the first step within a kind of a many steps we have to connect everyone. The Instagram to us is an invitation. It's the beginning. It's this kind of idea of what all our goals are. And we're inviting as many people as want to be involved to be involved. And there's going to be more invitations for, as Regina mentioned, the different committees that we're developing these ideas. Because to us right now, nothing is a quick answer. Like, we know we want an education committee and an advocacy committee, but we want all these things to take a long time, because, you know, we want the change to be deep and permanent.
Yeah.
And so that involves a lot of group discussion and collective decision making. And then fundraiser is, we have a GoFundMe campaign for our website, which is, I think, going to be really exciting and kind of display all these resources that we're talking about.
Yeah. I think that the Instagram is our appetizer for now, and we're going to get to the main course, the website. So I imagine how delicious that's going to be. I think one of my favorite things, I know Regina mentioned about the filters, and one of the, I think some of the fun things that we were throwing around was a filter where you kind of describe your like your aesthetic as a designer, where you're like, I love box sets, right? Or I love opera. And like people can search you by what you're good at, by what you're passionate about in the design, or I like no color, right? Like, okay, no color. And that's like a fun filter that I think will help people not pick a designer because they need diversity, but a designer that like they like because of their work and what they're good at, you know?
Yeah. I love that it also gives agency to the designer to define it, as opposed to, and like you're saying, as opposed to the diversity box that has been put on you. It's like, no, how do you see yourself as a designer, and how do you want your work to be represented? So I love that agency that you're giving to designers to sort of filter themselves. It's wonderful.
We're calling it the matchmaker button.
What was that?
We're calling it the matchmaker button.
I love it. Love it.
I also want to plug in that like everybody who wants to, I mean, I know that we're like new on social media and people have reached out. I think we should mention that we have a form, a Google form that you can fill out, and we'll have you in our email list, and anything that there's new, or if we'd love to have your content, which we always do, you
content.
Can submit. Yeah, we want content. We want to showcase everybody's work. We want set designers, we want stage managers, we want sound designers. Oh my God, sound designers.
We need sound designers.
They are out there.
Yes.
Please. Definitely. Yes. Can I do a shout out to the organizing members of
Please.
Lions? Yes, please.
Thank you. Just because they've been key and they've been so supportive and patient, and they've been asking the hard questions. And besides, of course, Tania, Ana Maria Aburto, my name is Regina, I'm part of it, of course. We have Alex Casillas, Natalie Arco, Aide Celide Antunaño, Carolina Ortiz, Courtney Flores, Jorge Arroyo, Alejo Vietti, Tara Houston, Anna Blazer, Luciana Stecconi, Benny Gomes, Mario Gomez, and Jesse Portillo. We are very lucky to have these fabulous designers and technicians with us, and we cannot do it without them.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. For our listeners, I want to make sure that we name your Instagram handle. It's at La Gente Network. And the Google form that Ana Maria just mentioned, as well as the link to the GoFundMe for La Gente Network, will be linked in our show description, and people can easily access it there. And before we finish up, where can our listeners find each of you individually?
Regina Garcia. My handles are weird, but you can find me through Regina Garcia for sure. And my portfolio is garciaportfolio.com. Thank you.
My Instagram is at Tanya Oriana Design, and my portfolio is tanyaoriana.com.
My Instagram handle and my website are both my full name. So anamariaburto.com. .com or Ana Maria Hurto on Instagram. And I would love, like, if anybody out there like wants to, if they need that resource to get into, like, know who's, I know right now things are a little slow because of COVID, but I want to share the places that I've been at, the places that I know are gonna give you work and that are good places to work at. I want to be able to share that with everybody. So if you're a scenic artist, hit me up.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for all three of you for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time. And then from all three different locations too. It's always a pleasure. And we are so excited to see the rest. We're excited for that website to launch.
Thank you for having us. This was
really
thank
you so much for the invitation.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great. We will see you all again really soon.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh.
So fun.
That was such a great conversation. They're all so lovely.
So wonderful. And just like, again, like so exciting to see what can come out of collective action, you know, and that reminder that, you know, we have all of the tools that we need amongst our extended networks. And when, you know, and that's the thing that I'm just so excited that we're seeing right now is so much collective action, so much communication internally within, you know, different affinity groups, and just seeing what's possible and not having to wait for it to come from outside. So it's just, I feel, what a great way to start the day with this conversation.
Absolutely, yeah. I think also just the way that they were speaking of the way it's organizing and the way that this network was born, it's also like a decolonized practice of like bringing people together, right? That just kept coming up for me. I loved Regina's metaphor of the Rolodex, like you're in a Rolodex. And it made me think of, there's something that I like to say is like, we're all showing up with like some pieces of the puzzle. And nobody knows what the picture is. Like, we lost the box, but we're working together to, you know, fit all the pieces together. And I have pieces, you have pieces. And like, I love that like the, what's the word? The reinforcement of community and collaboration and the power behind that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea too. We don't know what the puzzle is, but we're just putting it together. That's so true, you know, and it just, yeah, really thrilling. I'm so happy that this exists, and I'm so happy that we could hear from three of the organizing members, you know, and even, yeah, to talk about that decolonization of the lead, you know, the organizing principles of it, you know, it's a network, it's not an organization, as they, you know, said, and it's a collective of organizing members and, you know, not a sort of leadership structure as we always think organizations have to have, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I can't wait for the launch of that website.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be beautiful.
And it's going to look so good. Like, another shout out to Natalie Arco, who's their graphic designer, because if you're not already, you all need to be following them on Instagram, because just the design alone just makes you like feel so excited. It's stunning and beautiful.
Yeah.
And, like, really like amps you up. And I love too the pillars, the way that they've acronymed it as VEA. Like, that was really cool.
Love that. Yeah.
And Mujercules, I think.
Oh my gosh.
These Wednesday shout outs, they have a full plan to roll out, and I just can't wait to see it unfold through the rest of this year and into the new year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. We really always appreciate you taking the time to convene with us and listen and be here to hear from some amazing artists that you may be familiar with or you may not be familiar with. And we are excited to continue rolling out the rest of our fall season here. Remember that new episodes are coming out every other Friday through the end of December. As far as Soul Project goes, you can find us at www.soulproject.org. We are The Soul Project on Facebook and at Soul Project NYC on Twitter and Instagram. So until next time, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.